Ladies and gentlemen, we've been gone for a while.
How long have we been gone? Exactly.
It's been almost a month.
Oh.
World has gone crazy.
Crazier than it was a month ago.
It at least has given me time to figure out exactly what I want to say about what's going on in America right now, because it's freaking scorched earth.
I don't even know what I want to say, because I feel like welcome America to what has been in front of your eyes for 400 years.
We about to get some unfiltered truths out this piece. In the meantime, what happened was sports in general are slowly starting to come back.
Because we've all decided that the virus no longer exists.
Yeah. Just disregard everything that's happened over the last 3 months.
And not just sports, like life. Everybody has decided that the virus no longer exists.
The PGA Tour has held its first week of golf tournaments in 3 months. They're doing so with no fans.
I mean, golf is definitely probably the easiest sport to come back. Once you take away the fans, it doesn't really require that many humans to actually be there. I guess tennis is probably another potential option for that, because like, also the players don't ever touch each other, so that also makes it easier.
Golfers have been giving each other air fist bumps at the end of their round.
Exactly. Like, it's really easy to keep people from, like, touching and talking. And
commentary. CBS usually has two commentators in the booth, but Jim Nantz is on site in the booth, and his partner, Nick Faldo, is doing commentary from the studio in Orlando.
Like, so, see? That's easy.
Yeah. See? There you go.
Yeah, I feel like golf is definitely one of the easier sports. Tennis is probably also easy, but we'll talk about the U.S. Open here in a second. They're definitely not making it easy.
Soccer has come back in Europe. The MLS will be on its way here shortly.
Playing at Walt Disney World.
They're going to have some neighbors. We're going to talk about that in a minute, too. But, yeah, so we'll see what other sports have down the line. But, I mean, This should be fun. Everybody pretty much saying, you know, screw the coronavirus. So the USTA is still pondering whether or not to hold the tennis US Open, which is scheduled for the end of August.
The USTA has the issue that the US Open, I mean, they've already laid off, 120 people? They were not like Wimbledon. They did not pay for pandemic insurance and get a massive nine-figure payout when there actually was a pandemic, and they could just call it a day and say, see you next year. They were not like them. They got to figure out what they're going to do, because from what I've seen, I don't think that financially it's viable for them to completely skip the year.
But some have expressed concerns about proposed plan for players to come play the U.S. Open.
It is not going to be a comfortable endeavor for them to come and do it. It's not going to be comfortable.
If these athletes really want to play their sport, I mean, they're going to have to be uncomfortable, and they're going to have to make concessions that aren't going to be comfortable for anybody. But that's just, if you want to play, that's what's just going to happen.
Correct.
College football players have come back to campus for workouts, and already a handful of college athletes have already tested positive while coming back from workouts.
Yep. Did FSU players ever come back for workouts?
Yeah, we had two test positive already.
One disclaimer for this episode: I have been off social media probably for the last 2 weeks. So while I've been actually paying attention to the news, like actually reading the news, like the actual news, not reading the trash, there are still things that I am missing, because if it didn't actually make it into a news article.
So the NCAA has basically given the go-ahead for schools to resume workouts. And I think schools are pretty much saying that they're going to open up in the fall. So like we said earlier, just, you know, a month ago, everybody was like, kids might not return to school until 2021. Now it's like, let's just roll the dice and go ahead and come back.
I feel like it's a roll the dice, let's just do it, but also a please pay your deposits, please pay for your housing. Like, we as a schools need money, but we're not going to say that we're not going to do it. But I've talked to, I've just heard, like, parents talk, like, they have kids that are in those age ranges. And even then, like, they're not, they're still not sure that their kids are going to go back, like, and live on campus, or if that the schools can even make enough concessions to make it feel remotely safe. I mean, are, there's still schools in, what, California that said they're going to do remote school, remote to the UC system in California. Because they're just going to be remote.
But everybody still thinks that football makes the world go round. So, especially in Florida, because Florida is the place to be. Let me tell you what.
Everything's open in Florida.
Disney World is not only the most magical place on earth, it's going to be where the NBA comes back together.
Is also going to be where the Disney World is the sports capital of the world.
NBA's coming. MLS is coming.
I guess it's a good thing they built that, what, 220-acre ESPN Wide World Sports. You know, in 1997, they were predicting in 2020, you would need all the professional sports. We need to be able to need one place to come play and hold everybody, like, on one campus. And Disney World would be the perfect place for that to happen. And then also rename, like, rebrand the entire complex, ESPN's Wide World of Sports, which I was there for that rebrand. That's when I was at Disney. I guess they were all, like, planning for this because ESPN's Wide World of Sports also has, like, a full broadcast center. That's where they go and test new technology for broadcast. Like, that's where ESPN does it all. They've got fields and courts and stuff for days. So they are a campus, not to mention a whole bunch of empty hotels. You know, the center of the sports universe.
So the NBA, if you have not heard already, the NBA voted to finish, like, I guess, somewhat finish the season. They're inviting 22 teams to Orlando to play, to finish the regular season with 8 games. Then if the ninth seed is within, like, a game and a half of the 8th seed, then they'll play a play-in.
Can I just say this whole thing is just too complicated for me?
Yeah, it really is. The only thing that's the same is that they're going to keep the playoffs, the actual playoff series, the same. So it's all, it's still going to be best of 7.
I'm kind of in a place where I'm like, wake me up when we get to the actual playoffs a little bit.
I mean, granted, this isn't going to start until July 31st. Players are pretty much going to be quarantined in Orlando for almost 2 months.
Right. And I mean, hey, if you think about Disney, Disney's main goal when, like, for tourists is to have them show up and never leave. So they're like, this is like Disney's ultimate show up and don't ever leave. Now, whether or not they can, like, go hang out at Disney Springs and stuff or not, probably not, because that's not really being quarantined and it's open. So they can't go to the movies. Sorry, guys.
So obviously, there's going to be no fans. I don't even think that they said, they also said that players won't be able to bring their family members to come watch the games until, like, the second round of the playoffs.
And anybody who leaves the complex has to, like, quarantine for 10 days upon arrival back. Sucks for, like, the players in Orlando who live in Orlando and, like, basically can't, like, go to their actual homes.
We'll see what happens at the end of next month. We'll see if any players sit out, because I think a lot of players, you know, they feel the need for, whether it's the coronavirus or the current state of affairs in our country, that they would be better served not playing.
And I think you're primarily seeing the players who are part of the 8 teams that are, some of which were already eliminated technically from playoff contention. Those teams are the ones who kind of don't want to be going. They don't want to go, have to be quarantined. They seem to be the players that are less likely to want to go do that. Which, I mean, I understand, but also, like, it's a paycheck. Like, you should probably go get paid.
Unlike the MLB players who, man, this, the MLB and its Players Association have been going back and forth for what, like, 2 months now?
Yeah. Everybody else is, like, working out their deals, figuring out where they're going to play. They can't even agree on, hey, we're going to start the we're going to even try to play.
Apparently, the MLB suggested a, I guess they proposed a 72-game schedule, like the end of last week, and the Players Association rejected it, and they don't have any counter offer. So now it's just like baseball is just not it's just not going to happen. Even though they had to draft Friday night.
Well, it's funny because the last episode we did do, which was a month ago, we were talking about how the owners seem to have been trying to use this situation to impose some version of a salary cap. The players weren't having that, which, if you know the MLB and their history, that makes sense. The players were not having anything that remotely looked like a salary cap come anywhere near them, so fine. But it just seems like it's gotten worse to the point where it's like, do y'all want to play? Like, or is everybody just willing to sit? But I will say, MLB players have probably the most discipline in terms of not doing anything if it means that something that they've negotiated gets lost.
That's probably why their freaking contracts are so bonkers.
Right.
And most of it is guaranteed. It's like, golly.
And also, like, their pensions are sweet. Like I said, the MLB players do not move. They do not care. They do not care about the court of public opinion. They do not care about the paycheck that's coming right now. They will not budge on the things that they've negotiated.
The minor league teams, on the other hand, they would like to play.
Yeah. That's because they don't make no money.
Yeah.
Literally don't make no money. They could go out and get a regular job and make more money.
The Jacksonville minor league team, the Jumbo Shrimp, they're usually, they have, during the season, they have Thirsty Thursdays where beers are like cheap. But since there's no baseball, they're having gameless Thirsty Thursdays where people can come buy a ticket and tailgate in the parking lot and still get cheap drinks.
What are they? Oh, they're just buying a ticket like they're going to the party or a bar?
Yeah, but they stay out in the parking lot.
Hey, that actually could be kind of fun. As long as I'm not going to be near nobody.
I know, right?
It's like, keep people away from me and we're good. Like,
they're still having movie nights where, like, they showed a movie on the big screen and everybody spread out in the outfield. Like, Jumbo Shrimp's still making it work, man.
I really want to go to a drive-in movie theater and I cannot find one in my area. Like, I need somebody to have one. People are having them everywhere, but, like, I feel like you can't find one here. And I want to go to one.
If me or my fiance hit Powerball, we are going to build our own drive-in movie theater. No, you laughing. I'm dead serious. The NBA's counterpart, the WNBA, is also trying. They're going to, I guess, attempt
a shortened season.
IMG isn't necessarily the happiest place on earth, but
it's still, like, in Bradenton, Florida, which is, like, 90 minutes from Disney World.
Yeah, for real. And IMG facilities are, they're pretty much top-notch.
It's a high school for adult people. Not really, but it's like college high school.
Now, obviously, the WNBA, I mean, yeah, they only have 12 teams, so having a shortened season, I mean, that won't be as bad.
And they hadn't started their season, so, like, that's also, I think, a huge advantage. I think part of what's hurting the NBA in their conversations, Major League Baseball is just on some other stuff. I think the NBA's issue is they're trying to complete a season. I think players who either were already eliminated from the playoffs or who know they don't have a chance to win a championship don't see an incentive to go be quarantined in Orlando for several weeks and then, you know, play some games and then get to go home. So I think that's the bigger issue that the NBA is having. And just how close it'll be to starting the 2020-21 season.
Yeah, because the NBA is trying to start the 2021 season like December 1st.
With the 2019-2020 season ending in October.
In October, yeah. So a month and a half. Well, the coronavirus is one thing. There's a completely different topic that is been dominating sports, the world, in the last couple weeks. Black Lives Matter, I guess, if that's how we want to start this off.
I mean, I didn't know that two black people had to say that Black Lives Matter. Like, we are both black. Both of, like, my husband's black. His fiance is black. My kid is black. Our future kids will be black. Our parents are black. Like, if you missed that in this show, then I'm sorry. Most of a good portion of our friends are black. Like, I mean, our lives matter. It's not really complicated.
Of course, we didn't think that we would have to say it now, but, you know, stuff keeps happening that we have to keep reminding everybody.
Right.
And, I mean, if we really want to start off this topic by talking about one Drew Brees.
Oh, dear God.
And, you know, this is kind of old news, but, of course, we've been out the game for a minute, so we haven't really had a chance to talk about it. Everybody is protesting, rioting over the last couple weeks.
And can we, wait, before we even go there, okay. On this show, and really in the whole wide world, but, like, on this show, rioting and protest are the voices of the unheard. People have been trying to tell the greater United States population that things were problematic and things were not better for the better part of 400 years. So we feel like we have to say it, but we're not saying anything about anybody who's protesting or rioting because, again, they're the voices of the unheard. If somebody has to break something for you to hear them talk about their pain, then that's really on you because you weren't listening. Yeah. Just like in some ways it's just like a child, right? A child who their parents aren't listening to them and they throw a tantrum. That's how you all of a sudden realize, oh, my kid's really upset about something. So maybe I should listen.
Colin Kaepernick kneeled, what, three?
Quietly.
4 years ago? Yeah. Quietly protested.
And really wasn't even going to tell us what he was doing and why he was protesting. He literally just sat down, and it wasn't until somebody asked him a question that he said why he was sitting down. But, like, he didn't have this intention to, like, talk to the whole world or tell everybody why he was doing it.
And ever since then, there's been this big brouhaha about, oh, he's disrespecting the flag, even though people have been saying for 4 years the reason why he's protesting has nothing to do with the flag. It has nothing to do with the military. Is to protest the injustice that has been done upon people of color for, like Courtney just said.
Injustice isn't a word.
Or injustice.
Isn't a word. Injustice.
Sorry, injustice. Whatever. We rusted.
And more than that, like, the anthem, the flag, those are all symbols of what our country is supposed to stand for, they're not humans. They're inanimate objects, right? They're supposed to be symbols. And if we are not, as a country, working towards being a more perfect union, then what do they stand for?
What?
Because if they stand for what the country actually does, then that's white supremacy and systematic racism. Are you proud of that?
But another unarmed black guy got killed by the cops last week, and this one went viral. I don't know if George Floyd has now become, like, the landmark, the one that is going to make everybody go, oh wow, this really has been a problem. I don't know, because we've only been saying it for a very long time.
I mean, personally, I think it was kind of the perfect storm, right? Because 2 weeks before that, we saw
Ahmaud Arbery.
Yes, we saw his shooting. Everybody saw that, and they were like, wait, they're just random people in the street that decided to shoot somebody? Like, they had some sort of authority? Like, Dear white people, you don't have authority over black people. You can't tell another adult what to do, especially if you are not actually in some sort of authority figure. Don't get me into cops, because cops, you're also just citizens. So maybe you're not the be all end all. Like, you're just not. Like, sorry. Like, somebody disrespects you does not give you a license to shoot them. It's really not that complicated. You had that happen. Then you had Central Park Karen, who decided, oh, I'm doing something wrong. Let me say, I'm going to call the cops and tell them that an African-American is threatening me, even though all he's doing is telling you to follow the rules in the park. You decide. So you had that happen. Then you had George Floyd. So it was like a week of draining, I don't want to see anything ever again in life. And all of them were caught on video or audio. And we were also all stuck at home.
Yeah. So now the NFL finally wants to grow a conscience. But 3 or 4 years ago, when all this was going on, and
they could have just stood on the right side of history and been done with it.
Yeah. So now the NFL, Roger Goodell, they're all about Black Lives Matter. And it's just so, so frustrating, because especially for people like Drew Brees, who initially came out and reiterated that he doesn't agree with anybody disrespecting the flag by kneeling.
But this is the same Drew Brees who sat in the box with Trump and kiki'd it and played, took pictures. This is the same on national television. This is the same Drew Brees that did that. So what are we really expecting?
But then I don't know what changed Drew Brees' mind. I don't know if it was the protests in New Orleans that had his fans pretty much telling him to go F himself.
Especially in a city like New Orleans. Like, it's not like Drew Brees is the quarterback of the Patriots in a place where, let's be really honest, Boston has had a lot of very difficult race relations and issues. New Orleans. I mean, if it's not a majority minority city, it's close. And you think there you're going to be popular?
And he's done his fair share to give back to that community, which is probably why it hurt that community so bad when he just.
He keeps not listening.
There you go.
That's it. Like, here's the thing. People have, when you're talking about a Drew Brees, he doesn't have to live in a world where this is part of his reality. He can do everything to support people in the world, support disadvantaged communities, support minority communities. He can do lots of work. But the challenges that they face, the understanding of like what poverty is, what systematic racism does, what lacks of education, what lacks of jobs and economic opportunities do, he doesn't have to live the world. He just can come in and help sometimes. But if you don't listen to the people that you claim you're helping, A, you don't know if the help you're providing is actually help that they need. And two, you're doing it to make yourself feel better. You're not doing it to actually help. And then if you go out and then continue to use that same voice and platform that they are a part of giving you to say and do things that don't advance the things that they need. He said it. He tried to walk it back. Trump basically made him make a decision. And it was like, his statement was like, oh, by talking to teammates and people, it's like, so you actually talked to your teammates who you are almost 40, dude. You've been on football teams your entire life. Did you never talk to like any of the black players ever? Like, football is such a microcosm of like America, because unlike basketball, where like there's only 12 of you, so if you're the only white guy or if you're only one of three, like you're gonna have to talk to the other players. You also play more games, so you spend more time together. You also start playing together at a much younger age, like through the AAU system and things like that. He doesn't have to engage with his black players unless he's literally on the field beyond, hey, what's up? They don't have to share lives. They play one game a week. They spend majority of their year in the off season, like really. So you're not having to like engage with these people or listen to their concerns or hear what they go through in life. So it's like, oh, I talked to, I'm like, but you could have done that 10 years ago. Like, they've been there the whole time. You didn't bother to listen. Again, listen. It's not complicated. Sorry.
Yeah. Vic Fangio, that dude, Denver Broncos head coach, who initially said that he didn't think that racism was a problem in the NFL. Like, dude, are you serious? Have you completely forgotten about the Rooney Rule and why it was instituted?
Have you completely forgotten about the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator still doesn't have a job and you guys hired like 12-year-olds this year? Like,
have you not forgotten about all the black quarterbacks who all the black quarterback prospects who continually get asked about switching positions when they try and get to the league?
Have you talked about, you forgot about Cam Newton, who is a reigning league MVP who doesn't have a job?
Like, come on, man. Pete Carroll. Like, we just teeing off on info right now. Pete Carroll, who wants to admire him when freaking 3-4 years ago, you didn't want to sign Kaepernick because.
And here's the thing about Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll actually had a reason not to sign Colin Kaepernick. Like, yes, Kaepernick would be the perfect person to back up Russell Wilson. But there's actually a reason for the Seahawks not to sign him. Like, he can actually get away with not signing him and it not being a big deal. Now, the Miami Dolphins don't have a reason to not sign him because they don't even have a quarterback. Yep. Like I could actually dismiss the Seahawks because there's a business case for not signing kind of Colin Kaepernick with the Seahawks, right? There's a business case. Mm-hmm. He's not really a backup. We don't need a player that's this high profile on our team, blah, blah, blah. Like, there's actually a business case. The rest of these fools that can't find a quarterback, anybody who's had more than 3 quarterbacks in the last 3 years had a reason to sign Colin Kaepernick.
Instead, they signed these
journeyman white boys who literally make their living making millions of dollars to sit on the bench.
Being third stringers.
Right.
Career third stringers. Now all of a sudden, there's apparently some teams that want to sign Cap. Now, 4 years later, teams want to sign Kaepernick, and all the players want to kneel now for the anthem. Not this grand pandering gesture of solidarity before they play the anthem. Now they actually want to kneel during the anthem.
The NFL is going to apparently direct, what, $250 million to social justice causes or to BLM causes or something.
And it may sound like we're just bashing the NFL, but kneeling aspect of this entire situation started with Cap. And now everybody, they mama, all these protests, at some point or another, everybody's kneeling.
Right.
And it's like,
and nobody's going to, and now everybody else, nobody's punishing anybody. Like, U.S. Soccer came off of their high horse and everybody's coming off their high horse about kneeling. It's like, it was never a big deal to begin with. Y'all all capitulated to the crazy person, the Mr. Orange person that lives in the people's house, and you were afraid that he would yell and you wouldn't have sports fans anymore. That was it. I was like, but sometimes, just sometimes, it is better to be on the right side of history than to be able to make all the money. Also, I'm still convinced that none of these people did any sort of like research or surveying to determine if part of their losing numbers were people who disagreed with their stance, not because they wanted them to stand for the anthem, but because they were mad that they took a stance against Colin Kaepernick and all of that. Like, they never seem to ever have like looked at it or surveyed it from that perspective. I would venture to believe that there were other boycotts that led to where they were at.
So now the NFL players are now asking the owners to be a part of this. And, well, for a league that only has one minority owner who's not even black, I would love to see how this ends up.
Philadelphia's owner, maybe Carolina's, because Carolina's owner was like, he used everything that's happened to tear down Jerry Richardson's statue, which I thought that was actually kind of hilarious because he was going to have to leave it up. But he used like he was obligated, like contractually, to leave Jay Richardson's statue up after he purchased the team. But he got to tear that thing down because of all of this, and he gladly took that opportunity. And his board wisely remained silent. So, like those two owners might do something.
You think Jerry Jones is going to do something?
Jerry Jones. You remember when he did kneel that one time?
Once again, the pandering.
Yeah. I don't think Jerry Jones is going to do anything. I think Jerry Jones will do whatever they do from a pandering perspective.
Next thing you know, the NFL is going to have like a Black Lives Matter Awareness Month where everybody is going to wear like black headbands and
oh dear God, please
wristbands.
No.
Just like they do for cancer, just like they do for the military, that's what's going to happen.
I mean, if you're going to put money in the coffers of people who are doing the work on the ground, then sure. But if you're going to just pander, we all have better things to do.
I guess this season, whether it's the coronavirus or this Black Lives Matter movement, the NFL is about to come to a massive crossroads.
And here's the thing. I'm pretty sure that the NFL is still going to have giant ratings because people are going to be like, oh my God, we have sports back. So they'll be fine.
As always, money rules the world. Obviously, with everything that's going on right now, this is passionate for us, obviously, because we're black and
literally like life or death. This is literally the difference between being worried about obviously as a black woman, you're worried about, I'm worried about my life, but like much more worried about my black son, my black husband, my black male friends. I mean, Smiley, I mean, do you know a black man who hasn't had a negative encounter with the cops? Do you know one? Cause I don't. And all of which are upstanding, law-abiding, professional people. We're not talking about people who would actually even be getting in trouble. We're talking about the ones that everybody else thinks is like, they're so great. And you're like, but wait.
But this whole thing and talking with most of my white friends about this topic is like, there was a point in time in my personal life where if a cop ended up behind me while I was driving, like, I'd start to have an anxiety attack and my heart would start to beat, like, out of my chest. That's just with them being behind me, me doing nothing wrong. And some of my friends, it's almost like an epiphany for them. Like, why would you feel this way? It's like, you don't understand that this stuff has been going on for years and years and years. And especially with everything that's happened in the last, like, couple weeks, it gets to the point where us as black men start to have, like, PTSD because we keep seeing it over and over again. Like, we hate to get to the point that it feels numb.
Well, the thing is that, like, you don't even have the option of it feeling numb because you're still going to get in a car and you're still going to have anxiety about what the reaction's going to be. And you're still going to be concerned if you're doing, like, it's weird stuff. You know what I mean? It's my husband does a lot of photography and drone photography and stuff like that. He does it on a lot of, like, houses, right? So he'll go to houses that are for sale. And you go to these areas and you know that you're supposed to be there, or he's supposed to be there. But the person's neighbor doesn't know what he's doing. Like, he was hired by the real estate agent. So, like, they know he's supposed to be there in that house, but the neighbor doesn't know. So the neighbor could think, oh, somebody suspicious is walking. And so, like, something that should be mundane is him doing his job. It's scary because you don't know what anybody else is going to think. And if the neighbor's like, oh my God, somebody's casing the house and he's black and you call the cops, all of a sudden that's could be a terrible situation. And he's just doing his job. And that's the part that you can't get numb. You don't even have an opportunity to get numb.
I remember when I was at Florida State, story time, I went out with some friends the night before, and I left my phone in their car. So the next morning, I wake up, and I, like, go to the bus stop because I got to go catch the bus to meet them to get my phone back. I'm at the bus stop. I see a cop car, like, to my right, and a cop car to my left to the entrance to an apartment complex that I live next to. First cop car comes up. This was, like, I think this was Tallahassee PD that drove up. Asked me if I had identification while I'm sitting at the bus stop. Okay.
Because, like, why?
Well no. Like, let me finish the story. With... No. I gotta get through the story before I can tell you why.
So, no, I was just saying, like, why? Like, why on earth would a cop... Like, somebody sitting, doing what they're supposed to do, sitting at a bus stop, obviously waiting for a bus. Like, why would you walk up to them and ask them for their ID on any planet? Like, but continue.
So, I get my ID. He's like, oh, we're looking for somebody, and you kind of fit the description, whatever. Like, fine, whatever. I'm chilling, waiting on the bus. So, he leaves. Like 90 seconds later, FSU cop comes up. He gets out the car. He asks me to show him my ID. I'm reaching in my pocket for my ID, and then he yells, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, I put my hands up. I was like, dude, you just asked me to reach for my ID. And then come to find out, there was a guy who, like, I guess that went around, like, killing people in that area the night before. Of course, I didn't know this because I didn't have my phone on me, or else I would have gotten the alerts. And this wasn't told to me until I got to my friend's house and got my phone. So I'm like, oh, that's why I just got racially profiled like minutes ago.
And that's the other thing. Like, you're just a black guy. Did you actually look like the black guy that they were looking for? Did you have any, like, did they think that it was a...
I think the description was the dude was like 5'9", 5'10", and weighed like 190 pounds.
Okay, since none of y'all haven't seen Smiley, even in college, Smiley's like 6'3", and like closer to 300 pounds. Like, there is nothing about a 5'9", 5'10", weighing 190 pounds that you would ever think Smiley. Like, you see him, no.
People ask me on a regular basis, did I play football? Did I play on the offensive line somewhere? I'm north of 300 pounds. I look nothing. It's just like, dude, come on.
You don't even have to, like, pay attention to the description. You just see a black man. Like, come on, guys. Like, if you have height and, like, approximate weight, like, you know that this man doesn't fit your description on any planet. I don't care if he's black or not. Like, despite what some white people might think, we don't all look alike. I promise you, we don't all look alike.
And this whole thing is, it's like, look, we're told not every cop is bad. And we don't paint every cop with a broad brush. But apparently, all black people get painted with the same broad brush. Which is why we're in the situation we are in now.
Yeah. And that's the problem. Like, I mean, like, I worked for the World Police and Fire Games. So I was embedded in kind of a police department for... 2 years, and it was kind of right around Michael Brown, and just having to listen to cops and their nonsense, and then trying to justify to me why the actions are okay, was mind-boggling. Maybe one day I'll tell stories about that, because let me just say this: when I've gone to the range for the police department that I was kind of embedded in, and you see, like, their target practice. When all of the good guys are white and they're not people. They're just, like, targets. Like, they're not humans. And they don't look like people. But all of the good ones are white and all the bad ones are black. Like, subliminally, that's a message. You know what I mean? Like, subliminally, you're telling somebody, you're giving somebody a message that when they go through their exercises, they're supposed to shoot all the black ones. Even if it is a piece of paper, it's a message to determine, like, it helps people think about, like, whatever. All cops are not bad, but if you are not a cop that's not actively trying to change your department, then you're complicit. And the problem is, as what MLK used to say, the worst person is not the one that's racist. It's the one that's silent. That's the problem. It's like, for all the quote unquote good cops, if you're still silent, then you're not helping.
The police they're supposed to do two things. Every policeman, protect and serve. And it's hard because in my current job now, I am supposed to work in conjunction with the cops, but yet sometimes I still feel afraid of them. And it's not fair to them, but it's also not fair to us because we're not the ones, most of the time, we're not the ones with guns. And look, we all understand that there are going to be times when police have to use whatever force necessary.
But can we say, most cops never have a real reason to pull their gun. Being a cop is actually not on the top 10 most dangerous jobs in the country. Like on the list that they come up with, being a cop is not actually, because most cops never encounter anything that will have them actually afraid or having them actually in a situation. But that's also part of why their reactions are so poorly when they do end up in a situation, because they're not really ever going to have to be in one.
All we want is some accountability. And then the times that everybody has seen that a cop has acted inappropriately, nothing gets done. They either get acquitted,
they don't get arrested, and they still have a job.
And that is the reason for these protests. That's the reason for these riots. Nobody says that the whole looting, nobody says that's right. But guess what? Like Courtney said earlier, if something bad keeps happening to the people and you're not listening, they're going to take extreme measures to get you to open your eyes. If that means just last night, I think when George Floyd happened, I said, give it until the weekend. I guarantee you another person is going to replace him as a hashtag. And I'll be darned, just last night in Atlanta, another black dude got killed by the police. This time, I guess he had a taser, whatever. But
he was asleep in his car, and they sent the cops out. He took a sobriety test. He was drunk, which is why he was sleeping in his car. Now, this inane rule of you being able to still be charged with a DUI, even if you're asleep in a parked car, like, it's inane. Like, you're not hurting somebody. You're in a parked car. Like, I don't even know how we get to, hey, somebody can be arrested. You know, yes, he was not in the greatest spot because he was, like, in front of a drive-thru, but his car was parked. He was asleep. The fact that he could be arrested for that is ridiculous within itself, but he can be. So he ran, and he tried to resist and all that. But we have to stop equating somebody running from the cops, somebody resisting, somebody reacting poorly to a bunch of people waking them up out of their sleep,
to a death sentence.
We have to realize that, like, yeah, these things are not death sentences. Like, that's the thing about George Floyd. He was suspected of passing off a $20 counterfeit bill.
George Floyd might not have even known that that bill was fake.
Right. At this point, we don't even know if the bill was fake. We have no idea. It was suspected of. That doesn't equal death. We have to stop saying, like, somebody was doing something wrong, potentially illegal. Okay, that's fine. But that doesn't equal death, especially these minor offenses that shouldn't be anything. Like, you wake him up, you should just wake him up and be like, hey, can I get you home? That's really all the cops should be doing. Drive the dude home and tow the car. That's really all that should be. When you really think about it, DUI, guy sleeping in his car, drive him home, tow his car. That should be it. If your job is to protect and serve, not, you don't need to give somebody a breathalyzer test. He's not in a place where he can do harm. He's not operating the vehicle. Like, we've got to stop equating things that are relatively minor to being okay to shoot somebody essentially in the back. Like, why was your gun ever out? I don't care if he's resisting. Let him go if he's gonna run. Or here's a great idea: chase him, like tackle him. Like, there, the distance between shooting you and somebody in the back and everything else you could have done is, there's, it's so vast.
He's drunk. You could easily like trip him and make him fall. Something like this.
It's so frustrating because like we've got to stop equating doing something, because it'd be different if somebody had a gun in the cop's face or had a weapon in their face. And don't talk to me about a taser, because if you can tase another human as a cop, you have to get tased as part of like being a cop, I think. I mean, in the military, but like you'll survive. It doesn't equal death. And that's the problem, is that like you're going to deadly force way too quickly because you don't like, there's a gap. Why are you always pulling your gun? The only thing you know how to use? It's ridiculous.
As far as racism goes, look, racism is going to be here until a comet comes and blows this planet up to smithereens. It's never going to go away. Not while I'm alive, not while my child is alive, while my grandchildren are alive. It's going to be here until this planet no longer exists. But we have to find a way to get about as level as possible in this country as far as everybody getting an equal opportunity, whether it's being policed, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare, whether it's job opportunities, at least as even as we can with regards to how we treat our fellow person.
And it starts with being able to talk about it. If you're uncomfortable talking about race, go read a book. Just go read a book. Black children have to learn to talk about race because it's part of their lives. Then white adults can do 10 minutes of research to understand how race impacts their lives positively, negatively, and those around them. It's really not complicated.
Yeah. If there's anything that people watching George Floyd with a cop's knee on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, is that maybe this, of all things, this might be the turning point where our white people finally see you like, oh, wow, that was wrong. And now we can begin to have those uncomfortable conversations that our white friends have been avoiding.
They're only uncomfortable until you start talking about it. Until you start, like, here's the thing. And just to all of our, I don't know if we have any white listeners, who knows? I don't know who our listeners are. It's, nobody is blaming you for the fact that you are white. Just like I'm black, we didn't really have a choice in the matter. We were just born. We were also all born to quote unquote the greatest country on earth. Notice the quotes. Nobody's blaming you, but you do benefit whether you want to acknowledge it or not. And that's not a bad thing. Nobody's blaming you for benefiting. So can we leave the guilt at home and have the conversation about the change? Because that's kind of like the hardest part, is like, I know that it's not your fault. I know that most of the people that we talk to that are part of our lives, like, you didn't do this. Like, you didn't create the world that we live in. But you're a responsible human being in it, and you can be change. And you can help others to understand what is happening. And you can vote, and you can say, you can vote, and you can spend your dollars. And you can either do it in a way that keeps these systems in place, or you can do it in a way that actively creates change. And I think just gone are the days of being neutral, where people are just going to be like, well, I was neutral, and people are going to be okay with that. I think that's what you saw with kind of even Drew Brees, is that you can't be neutral, or you can't be like, well, it's about this other thing. And it's like, eh, it's not.
I'm sure when Colin Kaepernick started kneeling to begin with, I'd assume that in his mind, he didn't feel like he was going to have to kneel forever, because he believed in the possibility of, if we all work together, that we can change the things that have been happening.
I don't know why he believed that, but sure. At least at the time,
everybody wants to believe that it can happen. That's why that's why we protest, because we want to change it.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, maybe I'm just.
I mean, it's a little bit pessimism. Maybe more. It's pessimism. I get it, because ain't really nothing changed anyway. That's where the pessimism comes from, because this stuff keeps happening over and over and over and over and over. Like, we get it. But take heed. Take the advice. Hopefully, we get some change. Hopefully, this world starts to turn the corner. Who knows whether our lives matter or whether we can get a vaccine for this virus so we don't have to fear for our lives every day. On that note, hopefully it doesn't take a month for us to come back and talk to you again. But just look, man, in the meantime, just try and treat each other with respect. I mean, this is a lot. This is emotional stuff going to happen. Like, it's a lot for us to keep having to see each and every day. So, that's all I got.